The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Great to have you in. Welcome to Saturday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. Thumbs up or down here on Mr. Kranak. Do we have him? We have Mark Kranak. It is poncho weather this morning. So strap in, stay warm, stay dry, and enjoy the next couple hours of Hail Varsity Radio NFL Draft Weekend. We'll share some thoughts and relate it to that R-word recruiting, as it's been a pretty impressive year so far in 2017 when it comes to stars associated with draft picks. We'll talk walk-on program, the Rewind, 15 minutes away in our conversation this week with Joel Makavica. The importance, the need that the walk-ons culture provides a locker room. So we'll get caught up with Joel Makavica on that. Brandon Vogel, Gary Sharp next hour. And can join us this morning on Hail Varsity Radio, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Can tap the line if you're out and about this morning with the Schilling Bridge Cork and Tap House line. Also, on Twitter, at Hail Varsity, at Mark Skurs, at Schmidt underscore radio, and at TJ underscore Henning. Can hear us on the ESPN 1480 app. Kranak, what's good?
You know,
been soaking up the draft much? How you been?
Yeah, I've been watching, following it a little bit. How about you? It's not as interesting when you know there's going to be no Huskers taking the first couple rounds.
Right, but today you'll be on red alert. You're wondering if and when Nate Gary is going to be called today. If Seathan Carter goes. If Brandon Riley gets picked up.
If Westerkamp, maybe.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I was getting to Westy. And, yeah, you might pay a little bit more attention today just because this is the last hurrah, so to speak, rounds four through seven.
Hey, even Tommy or Alonzo.
Right.
Chance.
I love that.
Look, if C.J. Beathard can go yesterday, anything can happen.
I was having a cocktail with my buddy Iowa Russ last night, and he was kind of one eye on the draft going on. I didn't see where'd Beathard go.
In terms of round?
Yeah. Who and where? Yeah. I mean, he went third to where?
Third to San Francisco.
Okay.
Yep. Now, you know what? I don't think he's that bad of a translation to the pros, though.
No, because all he did was hand off and he ran a pro style.
Well, and he was hurt all the time, too. You know, he was hurt a lot. But he can, you know, he can gun it a little bit. When he's healthy, he can move a little. He's pretty accurate. He can do okay.
I think he's a pretty smart quarterback.
It tells you about Iowa a little bit, too. I mean, the guy put up pretty much no numbers, right? Like, he had no stats.
Except that important one that was 12-0 2 years ago.
It's true. Yeah, and he's got the bloodlines, of course, but I don't know. It tells you a little something about Iowa that, I mean, my God, you would never guess that he's an NFL quarterback, let alone a third rounder.
Is this how you want to start out your Saturday? Is this how you want to go into your weekend?
Talk Iowa.
Propping Iowa football, Kranak.
Well, not really. But, you know, sometimes you sort of have to. What does that say for them, though?
Well,
you had a third rounder, and that's all you could muster on offense?
Well,
okay.
Well, listen, the O-line has been well documented about what Wisconsin and Iowa have done, putting guys into the league, and does Nebraska kind of follow suit? I want to get into this real quick, and it comes down to recruiting star rankings, and Nebraska's been on top of it and, you know, pedal down between their evaluation, the ability to get kids on campus, and then secure commitments. It was good a year ago. It looks really good for 18 when you look at where the class and team is ranked nationally in recruiting rankings, and you have a disparity. You have fewer 5 stars than 3 stars. You have fewer 4 stars than 5 stars. And in the 2017 draft, you have the record for the most 5-star picks in round one. Myles Garrett, number one player overall in the 14 class, went number one overall. How about Stanford, first of all, getting a 5-star? Usually they kind of find their niche guy. But Solomon Thomas, you know, he went to the Niners, another 5-star. Leonard Fournette, Jamal Adams, Marlon Humphrey, Jonathan Allen. Yes, I'm stalking Bama guys. Adoree Jackson, O.J. Howard, Jabril Peppers, Reuben Foster. So of that list, I've cranked out like 4 Alabama names.
Yeah, of course, right?
Right.
Well, and but here, numbers back you up. Look, 19 of the 32 mm-hmm. were 4 or 5 stars.
Right.
Does that shock you? 3 stars or below.
Does that shock you?
It says a couple things, I think. It's now, if you look at how recruiting has ramped up and how the recruiting events have ramped up.
Right.
Right. The
more eyeballs, more evaluation.
Yeah. Yeah. The camp circuit, all of that. Like the big dogs are for the most part getting identified early and they're getting exposure early.
Right.
And there's a little bit more of a consensus lately being the last, I don't know, several years compared to maybe a decade ago. Where, you know, the top talent gets notoriety. They get noticed. You don't really fall beneath the radar anymore. And if you look at, like, I guess the batting average there's about 300 4-star and above recruits mm-hmm. every year.
Okay.
300. There's about 1,800 3-stars every year. Right? So you got 6 times as many 3-stars as you have 4-star and above. And then you look at how, like the percentage of those guys that were drafted. It's something like a less than 1% chance that you'll make it into the NFL as a 3-star. And it's like a 6% chance that you'll make it as a 4-star or above.
Mm-hmm.
So is it perfect? No, because you're obviously still missing on 94%, right? But you can say with pretty good certainty, with absolute certainty, that the 4 stars and above are far more likely to get into the NFL than 3 stars.
Yet the 53-man roster littered with more 3 stars just because of the 1,800 number you put in
Absolutely.
Front of us. That's just the talent pool that you're most likely picking from. What's your expectation? Let's flip this around from 4 to 5-star high profile dude that gets drafted, and they did in 2017 in the first round, 19 of the 32. But your 4-star and 5-star coming from high school to college. What's your expected return on investment for that? What type of player, what type of career should that player have? I mean, the expectations are there, fair or not. If you get a guy like the latest and greatest example Nebraska had, you have two. You have Harrison Beck at quarterback, and you have Ndamukong Suh at defensive tackle. Those are your two most coveted positions in football. Get me a dude that can get after the quarterback and stop the run. Ideally, do both at a high, high level. And get me a quarterback that can win me big ball games and be smart with the football. Well, I think it's interesting. And if you're a first-round pick, my bar is unfairly high. If you're a first-round guy, I think you need a minimum of 8 years in the league. You need to be top 10 in your specialist areas, i.e., if you're a linebacker, make a ton of tackles. If you're a cover linebacker, defend the pass, get some interceptions, kind of like Lavonte David's done, okay? If that first-round Pro Bowl, I know there's politics with the Pro Bowl, but be that type of player that produces on the field. Be a leader on your side of the football. And be a fringe 4 to 6 time, 60% of your career, Pro Bowl guy. And then be a fringe Hall of Fame guy because of the investment where you're picked. That's an unfair bar, but that's kind of my thought. If you're a first-round guy, make a major, major impact for your club. And I look at a guy like Grant Wistrom. Grant played 10 years. Grant had some really good career numbers. But Grant was also a guy that, okay, his numbers sometimes didn't match other defensive standouts with the Rams or even Seattle. But from a leadership standpoint and being on the field, he was a guy that Seattle went and got as a free agent to help get them over the hump. And Grant's a major reason in that locker room they got to a Super Bowl. But Grant Wistrom, sixth overall, while his stats aren't like Neil Smith's, his impact was great, was fantastic.
Well, he's a perennial starter.
Yes.
The guy was never a backup.
No.
From day one. And I think that's the number one bar.
That's like, the norm, right? That's what I need out of my high draft pick.
Yeah, you're a starter if nothing else.
Right. you're not this black financial hole that's injured the time.
Now, you compare that to maybe what's your expectation of a four-star or above that comes to Nebraska? What's your expectation? And it has to be different if you're at Alabama.
Right.
Because that's all they get.
Right.
Right, so some of those guys aren't going to work out. Like, just, you know, there's only so many spots on the field.
And that's okay because they'll replace four-star with four-star.
Right. But at a place like Nebraska where you sprinkle in, generally speaking, and that's sort of turning with this particular class, there's actually quite a few highly rated guys. But for the most part, your expectation then when they come into Nebraska is basically two-year starter.
Yeah,
that's my expectation there.
I'm gonna go a little bit further than that and say not just 2 year starter, but give me an All Big Ten selection, first or second team, and be a guy also that is drafted in the first or second day of the draft.
Okay, I would do that for 5-star.
Okay, that's okay. Okay,
4-star, you're a 2 year starter.
Okay,
5-star, you're all conference and you're drafted.
Okay,
Those are because that's basically what the 5-stars are saying. You know, like when you boil down the recruiting rankings, they're looking at potential. They're
Those
looking
guys
at
going to the NFL. It's just a matter of where
pro potential. Right. Do you have that sort of elite athleticism to get you to that level? You know, and in some way, you like Alonzo Moore, for instance, he was a 4-star.
Sure.
And look, when the guy was healthy.
He was a separator on the field.
Yeah, yeah. Which is why a guy like him intrigues me today for the draft. I doubt it he'll get picked up. But you know, if he gets into a camp, similar to like a Mohamed Cisse. Like Mohamed never saw the field, but hey, the dude still has all the measurables and he's still really fast and he can jump high and he's strong.
And he'd been on a practice squad, if memory serves. I mean, he was good enough to spend time in Detroit.
Right.
Couldn't play at Nebraska for whatever reason, but Detroit sure liked him for a couple of years.
Yeah, he still might even be in the league. I don't know.
I think he is. He might be like Seattle practice squad or...
That rings a bell. And so that's what it is, right? Do you have that athleticism? Do you have that potential to get to that level? And you look at Nebraska's batting average in that department based on the expectations that we just had.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm picking an extreme example, but just to illustrate a point, Nebraska's batting average on 4-stars and above has not been very good. Okay, one, you don't get a lot of them.
Right. So you better hit when you get.
But you look particularly at 2011, which not that long ago, right? Like, for instance, Charles Jackson was in that class, and he just finished his career.
Sure.
Okay, so like you're talking about guys that are, you know, medical red shirts that literally just finished their career. Most of them finished last year or the year before. You had 11 4-stars in that recruiting class of 2011. Four of them transferred within their first 2 years. You're thinking about that's Ryan Klatchko, that's Tyler Moore, that's Aaron Green. The other one's escaping me. Can't think of who the other one is. So then you have 6 left of these 11 4-stars you brought on campus. 4 of them transferred within 2 years. Bubba Starling was another one, never made it to campus. So you got 6 left. Of those 6, The only one that I would say lived up to that bare minimum of be a 2-year starter is Damian Stafford.
And he was a JUCO.
He was. The other guys were Ryan Reeves. He contributed, but he got hurt a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had a good solid year of starting. David Santos was up and down throughout his career in terms of whether he was a starter or not. Zach Starrup didn't crack the starting lineup until his senior year. And then now he's, you know, still on a roster with the Chiefs, which is good. But for the most part, Nebraska really only got what you would expect out of a 4-star from Damian Stafford. And the other 10 didn't quite work out.
Well,
like that's nuts. That's a low batting average. That's a very low batting
I'll
average.
Say this, though, and Aaron Green's the example because he did well at TCU. But to Nebraska's credit, while you can talk about the average in 2011 of all the 4-stars they got, and it was Damian Stafford that got you a 2-year deal, you also had Jamal Turner that
– yep. Showed, not a 2-year start.
No, I mean he what could have been, right? I mean,
right.
With injury and just usage, Todd Pete, his brother,
Todd Pete was the other transfer. Yeah,
he got out, but you have a guy like Amir Abdullah,
right?
That he went second round. So
let's be honest, he was sort of a late flyer guy for Nebraska.
He was like, you know, 12th hour. Come play running back, and thank God you got him because he's one of the best to come here.
Yeah.
So you better hit on those 3-stars if you miss your 4-stars, which is what every program's saying, again, unless you're Alabama because you replace 4-star with 5-star and 5-star with 4-star. So the batting average part is well documented. And moving forward with that, do you feel better with this regime that maybe there'll be more 4-star hits? Because the 4 and 5 stars are the guys that everybody sees. They're more ready-made, like you've indicated. Can you develop them further? Can you get 2 years out of them? And can you get them to the league to showcase other future 4-stars that come here, you'll go to the league? Do you feel like, okay, Nebraska can turn the corner not only with accumulating more of the high-profile talent, but can that talent hit and be a better batting average? There's nothing worse than being a program that gets a ton of talent, just kills it every February, and you end up with 8 wins as your ceiling. And you can point to A&M. You can point to Texas. You can point to UCLA. Ole Miss, I mean, they jumped from a 5-win team or a 6-win team to their peak, a 10-9 win team, okay, based on the league they're playing in. But don't be like some of those other programs that, because of their location and vicinity and talent pool in the state, that can just show up, get these kids, go win with them. And that's what was so cool and unique about Nebraska for so many years. Not only the development, the walk-ons, the 3-stars, the NFL guys they got in, but when they got them here, they got developed and they performed at a high level.
Well, let's look. Let's look. You're asking about this regime. Let's look at 2015's recruiting class.
Okay.
Nebraska brought in 6 4-stars. Out of those 6, I would say half of them are already definitely trending towards meeting that bare minimum of being 2-year starters. Yeah, Eric Lee, he's coming along. Looks like he'll probably be a guy that has a place in the secondary, starting nickel, maybe a starting corner.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to say so far signs point to that being a success. Avery Anderson, jury's out. Khalil Davis?
Yes.
Signs are good. He's probably going to be a 2-year guy. Stanley Morgan.
Already.
Yep. Have to say, yep. Jalen Barnett. Jury's out. And then the other one is Jordan Stevenson, who obviously transferred. So out of the 6, 3 of them are signs are pointing to, they're going to hit.
Which is better than 211.
Right?
Already.
Yeah. And then you can go to 2016, and you got four stars. Got John Reardon. You don't know yet, but he's in the mix.
He's at least pushing for a better center spot.
Yeah, he's in the mix already. Chances are, signs point to him being a hit. Patrick O'Brien, yeah, he's sitting behind Tanner Lee, but he's already your backup. He's a redshirt freshman. There's a good chance that he'll be one of those guys, too. Markell Dismuke, pretty loaded secondary. He hasn't necessarily emerged. Lamar Jackson is the other one, mm-hmm. and it looks like he's already got a starting position. So then you go back to 2014, and you look at those, that's Pelini's last class.
Yep.
He had four guys there. Tanner Farmer meets the criteria. Monte Harrison,
baseball.
He's playing minor league baseball. Nick Gates meets the criteria. And then Mikhail Wilbon, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So of late, anyways, the signs point to, it's probably too simple to say good development,
mm-hmm.
but the signs point to that.
They're on the field and they're producing.
Yeah, the signs point to your raw material is, one, staying, and two, they're producing.
Mark Kradak, Chris Schmidt, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Weekend edition, TJ Henning, producing engineering. We've talked about stars and return on that investment and translating to the NFL and also translating to your college program, a major reason for Nebraska's success. For years, the walk-on program, the walk-ons pushing those four, three- and four-star players. It's a great culture developed. Joel Makovicka, one of the best to play at Nebraska. We'll talk fullbacks, we'll talk walk-on, and we'll talk program culture. That is next. The Rewind segment follows right here on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
With Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Welcome in, Husker Hall of Famer, NFLer, walk-on, and kind of culture setter at Nebraska, Joel Makovicka, back with us. Joel, it's been forever. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
We're doing all right, man. Just kind of getting ready for the NFL draft and spring games kind of winding down, that whole talk and discussion. I wanted to run you down. Can't tackle you, so I wanted to run you down and talk a little bit about Nebraska. What's up?
Not too much. You think you can run me down even?
No, I can't. I mean, my car could, but I can't chase you. Come on now. You've seen me. My 40 speed never ever materialized. So
don't sell yourself short.
No, I completely am. I'm being honest. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the things that are going on with Nebraska football and kind of get your reaction, Joel. And you had Friday where coaches, assistants went out all across the state to spend some time with different regions of the state and high school coaches. What are your thoughts on that? I know it's important, but it's some fences that need mending, if you ask the high school community. And Riley and his staff have been doing that between Lincoln, Omaha, Central Nebraska, Western Nebraska, Northern Nebraska. Do you think that's something that can it be mended? And it sounds like they're trying to.
You know what? I think it can. You know as well as I do, this state has always been about Nebraska football. So anytime you make the effort, it can absolutely be mended. It's just, you know, you can't have lip service with it. You have to go out and get in the schools and blanket the state, because at the end of the day, you know, Nebraska has some good players that will come in and work hard and set a culture for the Husker football team, and that's something we have to get back to. And I think, you know, they're doing a good job with getting back to recruiting some of these guys to walk on at the university and give scholarships to some of the guys that deserve it. I think the biggest thing that I see with the walk-on program is the amount of kids we have that were taken as walk-ons. I think they're limiting our squad to 125 players. So if you have 85 on scholarship, you're talking about only bringing in 40 walk-ons over a four-year period, and you're saying, you know, with attrition, that might be 10 to 15 a year. We had, when on our squads, we had 180 players. And so anytime you have those numbers, you're bringing in, you know, 80 to 90 walk-ons, and you have that ability. If you have that many, there's going to be some that really you hit a home run with. Mm-hmm. And that's something where I think Nebraska football has to get back to it. Now, I'm not saying maybe 185 or 180 guys on the squad, but, you know, expand that to, you know, 145 or 150 instead of 125.
Joel, what did you want to bring to the party when you got to Nebraska?
You know what? The biggest thing is being a kid growing up in Nebraska, I used to go to all the football games, and through the 80s and late 80s and early 90s, we were good. And you got to see that growing up. And there was that culture and that aura around Nebraska football growing up here that, you know, if Coach Osborne came to your school or any of the coaches came to your school and asked you to walk on, you were going to walk on if you were in this state. And so what I wanted to do getting myself to Nebraska is bringing that mentality, that culture, that I understand the history and the legacy of Nebraska football and all the people that came before. And that's some of the things, guys, that we got from Florida and California and New Jersey didn't understand until they got here around the kids from Nebraska that grew up with it. And just that Nebraska kids have that hard-nosed mentality that you're going to outwork people. And that culture of Nebraska football, to where we had a lot of great scholarship kids from Nebraska and then walk-on kids from Nebraska that set the tone with that culture. And you can ask a lot of people and like the Grant Wistroms and the Jason Peters that I played with, that a lot of the Nebraska guys set the culture and set how we worked. And then we brought in a lot of those guys that were of that mentality from across America that they bought in, and we gelled and were good football teams.
Joel Makovica with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Makovica Physical Therapy. Can check out a couple locations in Lincoln, and what are you up to, like 600 now in Omaha?
You know, I'm working towards that. We're not there yet, but we're working towards getting there.
Okay, well, I threw a number that sounded accurate out there. Well, I like what you say, the heartbeat, the culture, the toughness, the roughness, just not going to be outworked. Joel, how were you discovered? I mean, I know you were a tremendous high school player, but mm-hmm. Who was the first coach to come check you out?
You know what? The first coach to actually come check me out was Coach Young. Who was kind of, you know, that liaison between, you know, the high school coaches and Coach Osborne and scoured the state. But there was a lot of them that came to the school, and then Coach Osborne would come. But you know, it was probably a little easier for me as far as getting discovered, because my older brother was there with Jeff went there, and so then they knew about me as a younger age than most of the walk-ons, and that was good for me because I played 8-man football. But you know, they recruited me hard and brought me in on official visits and things like that. But Coach Young was the first one to come to the school, and then Coach Osborne came. But like I said, it was my path there was probably a little easier than some guys, just because I had an older brother that went there.
Got to ask you, what you hear, and you work with high school kids, they'll come see you. Uh-huh. I mean, you're involved in the community. What do you think, kids still want to come to Nebraska? Is the passion level still there, turning down a Craig Bull, turning down North Dakota State, turning down K-State? I mean, turning down Coach Solich. I mean, is it still there?
Well, obviously, it's more difficult, and there's different challenges that were there in the 90s. And by that, I mean, there's, you know, if you go to a Kansas State or if you go to an Iowa State or you go up to North Dakota State even, there's so many games that are on TV nowadays that these guys, their families can watch them play without traveling there. So there are a little more challenges. And the second challenge is these kids didn't grow up when Nebraska football was top 5, top 10 in the country year after year. And that's one of the things Nebraska needs to overcome now. But as far as the passion of growing up in this state, there's absolutely still young kids' passion that they want to be Huskers and grow up, you know, going to the Nebraska football games, and that's their lifelong dream and goal to go there. And then their parents are of the age that they remember when Nebraska was dominant. Nebraska was the Alabama of the 80s and 90s. And that is the little bit of difference now is there's kids growing up in this state that are rooting for Alabama, are rooting for Oregon, are rooting for LSU, and they're still rooting for Nebraska, but Nebraska might not be on that pedestal as some of the other programs just because we haven't been as dominant as we have been, and we have to get back to that to make sure, hey, these guys will turn down Kansas State. These guys will turn down Iowa State to walk on. There was a lot of those guys when I came through that turned down scholarships to some Big Eight schools at that time, and then even the South Dakotas, the North Dakotas, and the Division II schools to walk on at Nebraska, and they were happy with contributing. They were happy to be on special teams, or they were happy to be on scout team to where they knew they were contributing to a national championship program, and by that I mean they were going out every day in practice and giving it to the starters and giving it to the second team, and they took pride in getting us ready to play. That says, hey, we take pride in when you guys go out and destroy Colorado or you go out and win titles because they're a part of that team. And they just bought into that even though they weren't playing a lot.
Joel, I got to ask you here about 2 minutes. The NFL draft is Thursday. You're a guy in the fourth round of the Cards. You had a pretty good NFL career. What do you remember about draft day?
You know, the biggest thing I remember is it was a grind. It was a long day, and back then we had the first three rounds on Saturday, and then the last four rounds on Sunday. So, you know, it was kind of nerve wracking for me because I was told, you know, I'd be gone on the first day, and so waiting around that first day, and it gets long to wait around. So it was a nerve wracking day, and then when I didn't get selected in the first day, you were a little disappointed. But what helped me is I was like the 12th pick of the fourth round, so the next day, so I didn't have to wait around much the next day. But it was an unbelievable experience to watch the draft with my family, and then have all the coaches from the Cardinals call and finally get drafted. But it's a nerve-wracking day for a lot of these guys. And it's kind of changed a little bit where they have the first round and then the second round is at night. But it's a nerve-wracking weekend, a nerve-wracking day, and you just want it over so you can figure out where you're going, where you're going to be. And we flew out right basically after the draft and had rookie camp, you know, the next week. So you turned around and were wherever you got drafted. I went to Arizona the next week and was starting practice. But it was one of those fun, life-changing experiences that wouldn't change it for the world. But the first day is a little nerve-wracking.
I bet. Joel Makovicka with us, Hail Varsity Radio, and Makovicka Physical Therapy. Joel, about 30 seconds here. I got to know, last question, how's the golf game?
Oh, man. You know what? I played in the alumni tournament with Tim Carpenter and Matt Hoskins and Bill Ford, and we actually won it. But I got carried a little bit around the course, Chris, and the golf game. I'm working too much to have a real good golf game. And okay. So I know when Bill LaFleur and Matt Hoskinson and Tim Carpenter are playing good golf, they're not working very hard. So I focus more on academics and football in college and not my golf game like those three did. So if you ask me how my golf game is, not very good.
That's good. I think your golf game is probably pretty awesome, but it's nice of you to give credit to guys that are they're able to play golf all the time. I like that.
Well, they blocked for me so much during my career, I figured I have to give them a little pub.
I think you need to. That's good. Joel, we'll do this again, man. It was fun to catch up. Thanks for a few minutes today.
All right, buddy.
Have a good one.
You too.
Joel Makovicka, Hail Varsity Radio.
Now it's time to get back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
All right, that's it!
You two guys leave me no choice. No television for a week. What?
Good times with Joel Makovicka, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Good stuff on the walk-on. Culture. We started off talking about return on that investment. Star rating. And does that mean what for an NFL team that takes you? And at the college level, the star rating coming into a college football program. Kredak, we spent some time talking about Seathen and Nate Gary, where they may end up, the direction they fall today, and some of the other maybe late round selections for Nebraska or even guys that signed free agency. I want to get into this with Vogues here next hour and get your thoughts now. Nebraska's direction with some of these camps, and it's more limited now, the satellite camp angle, but Nebraska using that ability in the Adidas club to kind of group together with other Adidas schools for camps, be it down at A&M or the upcoming junior college showcase down in Kansas. There's enough Adidas schools and some high-profile ones where, okay, you're going to be around some pretty good talent that'll come and flock to other Adidas schools, and could be pretty advantageous for Nebraska. If you look at the regions, you have Mississippi State down in SEC country, an Adidas school, Kansas, an Adidas school, A&M, Nebraska, Miami, also an Adidas school. You have UCLA that just flipped to Under Armour, so there's no West Coast rep right now. But not a bad idea to use that shoe influence because it's alive and well.
You got Arizona State, who I guess
you nailed
sort
the Pac-12.
Of call West Coast, but they're not.
But I it's mean, a Pac-12 representative.
There ain't no ocean in Arizona.
No, there isn't.
Ain't no beachfront property there. So if you look at Nebraska's camp, they're going to go to a JUCO camp. And by the way, it's pretty late. It's July 22nd, mm-hmm. So you're talking about a good, week and a half before fall camp starts. But they'll be at this camp in Kansas with Mississippi State, with Texas A&M, with Arizona State. And that's just the JUCO one that we know about for sure. But it's so I guess the good news about it is even though you don't have, I guess, you can't even call it traditional, but the traditional satellite camps, like those are gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're still getting the similar exposure, similar experience, but now you're doing it with more competition, right? I mean, it's not like, you know, where before it would be Nebraska linking up with some D2 school and they were like, you know, they were the belle of the ball. you had your one D1 program there. Now you're going to be sharing like mind space with those players with several other Division I's.
I don't think that's a bad thing though, because of
it should bring more guys, right?
Well, it's going to bring a certain talent level, but you look at Nebraska's staff right now. I'd be all good at showing my Nebraska staff in comparison to what are you getting at A&M, what are you getting at Kansas, what are you getting at Mississippi State, what are you getting at Miami. I mean, yeah. I think Nebraska staff and assistants and cachet with Riley, show it off. Be proud.
Yeah. Well, in Arizona State, too, I can't stand the Britney Spears headset that homeboy wears.
You're not a Todd Graham guy?
What is going on there? what's he... Like just,
I'm trying to picture
what he's a visor guy too, isn't he?
Yeah.
So he'll go 1-2 punch on you. He'll go Britney Spears headset and visor.
I got a bad confession to make.
What?
And I had we played
base visor.
No. I used to have a visor like 20 years ago, but it was just for I don't know. It's a rough time in my life.
You were young and dumb.
Yeah. We ran into to visor guy in youth baseball last weekend.
Okay.
And the only thing missing was the Lane Kiffin shades. All right.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, I want to give this coach a chance.
Oh, he's a coach?
He was a coach on third base youth baseball.
Wearing a visor?
Oh, homeboy was wearing a visor.
In baseball. Stop it.
I am not lying.
He should have been ejected immediately.
Oh, absolutely. The kid should have started throwing at him. I was trying to step back from this image and reputation you have painted and planted in my mind for years about visors. McCranack, you're right, brother.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And he lived up to it.
Yeah. Look, there are
John with our John with our coaches, John with the umpires. So we go from Adidas schools partnering together to Todd Graham, the visor wearer, to youth baseball third base coach wearing a visor. I'm sorry to go off the rails here.
No, look, there are exceptions to every rule. And
he isn't one of them.
There's probably a listener or two out there that's a good guy that wears a visor. We're not talking about you, sir. We're talking about the other 85 to 90% of visor wearers.
You've never had a visor?
I've tried one on before and immediately knew that's not what I wanted to do with my life.
Was there lots of loud techno music and cologne sprayed everywhere? Was that your Abercrombie face?
Well, I put it upside down and put it to the side.
You were that guy.
What?
No, it's okay. I'm just saying.
But I didn't actually purchase it. I just tried it on.
Mm. Was it just to show yourself in the mirror what you could become?
Well, it was part of that. And it was also the one thing I appreciate about the visors is, you know, say you got some good product in your hair.
Right. It allows you to show the product off.
Your product, it's still. And so I think that's the main reason why guys like to wear it is they got some product. They got a fresh fade, and they're like, how do I display that and wear a hat at the same time? Visor. That's what it is. That's the solution.
Mm.
I can display the frosted tips and the spikes, and I can still wear a hat. Like, why would I not wear the visor? I think that's the line of thinking.
Well, we got visors for Christmas one year. I think I got a Mississippi State visor, and I don't know what my brother got.
Yeah.
It was rough.
I'm glad you moved on from that.
Didn't wear it.
That phase.
Very long. Once in a while, golf course.
What is? Oh, so you still do?
Well, I don't know where they're at. They've been confiscated by the wife.
Good.
She's like, don't wear a visor. You look like a goofball. I cleaned that up. Brandon Vogel does not wear a visor. We'll talk more Adidas partnership. Hour 2 of Hail Varsity Radio next.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranack.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranack. TJ Henning, where do you get TJ a bottle of cappuccino, brother? Out clubbing, homie? Maybe. Yeah. Kranack and I were in bed with our families. 9:30, Kranack, is that what time you called it good?
For which?
You were in bed early to be fresh and ready this morning, correct?
No, I never can be, man. I'm never asleep before midnight. I wish I could be, but it just doesn't happen.
That's all right. Yeah. Well, we will dive into the Adidas partnership a little bit further and catch up with Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com, and magazine. Gary Sharp is about 20 minutes away in hour two. Vogues, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm a little bit confused. I have some questions for you, Chris, about this Mississippi State visor.
Uh-oh. All right.
So I'm assuming you got this in like the mid-90s-ish?
It was likely like senior year. Summer before freshman year, yeah.
Late 90s.
Of college, yeah.
So where does one get a Mississippi State visor in that era? Like when you flip to the pages of East Bay, Mississippi State was not one of the 20 schools that you could get. You couldn't go to the website and just get whatever Bulldog gear you wanted. So I want to know where this thing came from.
See, I don't know. The Mississippi State one might have been my brother's, but I liked it better, so I probably took it. I actually had an Oregon State hat, too. I don't know where that's at, because, you know, it said Beavers on the front.
Oh, I get it.
Right, yeah, thank you. Right? We were all Navy fans, too. Yeah, I was that scumbag. Sorry. So, I think...
Let me guess, you had the Moorhead hat, too.
No, we couldn't find that one. I'm sorry to the world for that era. Now, I think either we got it at like a Lids or maybe even at the College World Series that year, because they were probably in it or they had been around.
That would make sense. I also thought maybe if it was post 96, they might be riding a Final Four bump with Eric Dampier.
So. Nicely done. So not only was I a provocative hat / visor guy for a week or two, but I was the bandwagon SEC team made it to a Final Four, not named Kentucky guy. Okay. Yeah, no, and I'd wear it golfing, and then the fiance, girlfriend, wife said, "We've got to talk. You're goofy looking anyway, and then that doesn't help."
Can I be honest, though? Schmidt, so for folks that haven't seen Chris...
What?
Great head of hair.
Right.
And this guy's it's thick and lush and spiky, right?
Nah, it's not spiky. It's longer now. I'm going more mafia style.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, of you have damn near picture perfect visor hair. So I could see
that
where
played into
a little
it.
Part of you
that played
that
into
was
it.
Like, look, I got this nice thick head of hair, but I also want to wear a hat. And so you're just kind of like, why can't I do both? And so you did.
I did.
Well, that's really what it's about, right? I mean, as someone who has no hair, I look at a visor and say, well, that doesn't serve one of the vital functions of a hat, which is to keep the sun off my head.
Yeah.
But if you have gray hair, then then it makes sense.
All it does is frame like the worst part of your head. If you're balding, you know, it just draws attention. Yeah. It says like draws a circle around. Look at where I'm receding. That's not good.
Vogue's Kranach's last tweet at Mark Skurs. Lots of visor wearing head coaches, visor wearing coaching staffs in the mix here. And the Adidas get together for junior college camp, Mississippi State, Louisiana Tech, Tulsa, Arizona State, A&M, Nebraska, non-visor. Hashtag earn it is this advertisement. The partnership with Adidas here, this could be very favorable for Nebraska, not just because of who Nebraska is, but who they're going to be showcasing with and also against. Do you like this partnership that Nebraska, Adidas, and these other schools from different, some Power Five, some non-Power Five leagues have formed?
Yeah, I think it's smart because by partnering with fellow schools under the same brand, effectively brands that really as an Adidas event, which is advantageous right now because Adidas is blowing up. And when you sort of look at that group of schools, you know, it's not necessarily football powers at the moment. You know, you got Nebraska, Texas A&M with some name value. You've also got Tulsa, Texas State. You know, it's kind of an interesting thought experiment. If you were to take all the Adidas football schools, like which one of those is trending up the most right now? Maybe Miami. Nebraska's probably not too far down that list. You look at A&M, Arizona State, they kind of go into this with their coaches on the hot seat. So it's not necessarily the most illustrious group of football schools right now, but Adidas is certainly an illustrious football brand at the moment.
And that's amazing how much that has flipped. What do you attribute that to? I mean, you're a guy, you follow more than just football. That seems to have turned literally in the last year.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a combination of the boost that is sort of the new Nike Air. Everyone wants their Boost sole, so it's legitimately a product innovation. They've also come up with good looking product, in my opinion, and it seems like their sales figures bear that out. And then they've also, I think, been really smart in terms of their marketing and who they partner with. You know, partnering with Pharrell and Kanye West, and that, those are just a few of them, speaks to a pretty specific demographic, a young demographic. And that's how you can kind of start to turn the tide a little bit.
Brandon Vogel with us, few minutes here, Hail Varsity Radio. Add Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, what is kind of the next step with the ability to connect with this brand, Adidas? I mean, Nebraska's been planting, you know, they planted their flag with Adidas back in 95. They've been a priority for Adidas, and other teams have kind of followed suit. It's more of kind of a select niche. It's not the more the better. I mean, Adidas is kind of thinned out by their choice and not by their choice who they have for football. But when it comes to being able to get connected with some of the 7-on-7 sponsorships, it's similar with AAU in that the shoe companies kind of help dominate that those leagues, correct? I mean, so to be associated with Adidas on the college level for some of these college-level camps, but also to be an Adidas school, doesn't hurt you with the 7-on-7 kids, does it?
No, it doesn't, you know, and as more of those things have started to be branded by the shoe companies, like, you know, a lot of the AAU tournaments are, I think you're starting to see with some of the guys coming up that at 14, 15 years old, if you're one of the top 200 or 300 football players in the country, much like basketball, you sort of go one way or the other. You become an Adidas guy or you become a Nike guy. A lot of the high profile Nebraska recruits, you know, seem, and obviously I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but just from watching their social media and things like that, they seem like Adidas guys. That stuff kind of matters, rightly or wrongly. So football is becoming a little bit more like basketball that way. As far as, you know, this camp, I think, is Adidas operating from a little bit of a position of power. And it's something we haven't really seen to this point. And I get the sense that they're sort of figuring out ways to keep the momentum running. And they're probably hearing it from the schools, too, say, you guys are killing it in every other regard. Like, how can we do more in terms of what we do between the two of us come next fall? You know, you see some of the Jordan schools, they all get their own special version of Jordans. The Pope has a pair now, which I'm sure he's thrilled about. We haven't seen a ton of that with Adidas yet, but they have a bunch of shoes right now that everybody wants. So I'll be interested to see if some of that stuff starts coming through. If you've got a Nebraska exclusive of a certain model of shoe and an A&M exclusive, things like that.
Do you think it has anything to do with that? This all coincides, like Adidas's rise and therefore Nike's, I guess, relative fall. It coincides with how well Oregon has been performing the last couple years, which was clearly like the Nike flag carrier.
It could. I mean, that is certainly their flagship school. And what's interesting about that is Nike sponsors the vast majority of teams in college football. And so you kind of get Oregon as one of those few that's really kind of the flag bearer for the brand, because there's just so much of it everywhere that you can get tied to Oregon's success or failure a little bit, I think. Also, you know, Nike's fine. Nike still dominates the market far and away. But Under Armour, you know, just their last quarterly report posted a loss, I think. That might be a big part of it, too. I think Adidas is probably taking a little bit more from Under Armour, which to this point had been pretty ascendant since the start of the company.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, and HailVarsity.com. Vogues, what are some things that Nebraska will be looking for JUCO-wise at this camp? And I know it's July, so I'm not trying to get too far ahead, but could they take a run at a couple of spots, ideally, and make it work out for them? Because if we're doing the Pepsi Challenge here and I look at the schools at this camp, I mean, A&M just had the number one guy go overall. They've gotten Von Miller. They've done fine, but it just seems from a trend standpoint, Nebraska might be trending a little better in the college football world from an excitement standpoint than anybody on this roster here. Louisiana Tech, good offense. A&M puts you into the league, but is their coach going to be around? And it seems like A&M's got this cloud over them of not delivering on expectations. Mississippi State, they, correct me if I'm wrong, were they a 3 or 4 win football team last year, maybe a 5 win team, a far cry from the Dak era where they were number one in the country for a couple of weeks. And Arizona State always seems to just maybe get a kind of raise your eyebrows win a year, but they'll have 2 or 3 losses a year where you're like, they sure as heck didn't follow up any success. I've kind of listed the Power Fives there. Can Nebraska kind of elbow out some of these other schools for prospects they like?
I think so. You know, it kind of goes back to which of these schools are trending up and trending down. And among that group, you know, Nebraska might be the leader. You might even put Kansas in that group. I mean, I know they only won, 2-3 games last year. But it seems like David Beatty has that thing at least trending in the right direction relative to Kansas. So I do think Nebraska is a pretty enticing prospect there. One thing you get with that kind of blend of schools from Nebraska and A&M all the way down to Texas State and Tulsa is you should get a pretty wide swath of kids because there's going to be a lot of opportunities there no matter what talent level they're at, if they're Power 5 or if they're more Group 5 or even borderline between the two. You know, in terms of JUCO prospects, like you're not getting a 2017 guy that late in the game. You're looking towards 2018. And I think you've seen – now, Nebraska hasn't got the JUCO guy under Riley, but I think looking at it nationwide, like you can find some pretty good pass rushers that way. Levante David obviously showed up and played some pretty good linebacker for Nebraska out of junior college. They also find a lot of good receivers there. So I think you're really looking at sort of unique playmakers, unique skill position guys who can come in and contribute right away.
Brandon, you just brought up something really interesting that I don't think we've really ever discussed. It's tempting for a lot of staffs when they first come into a new situation where they'll go JUCO to bolster their ranks immediately. Nebraska has not done that, like you just mentioned, at all. Zero JUCO prospects now through, 3 signed classes and a fourth coming, and there's no commitments out of any JUCO for this fourth class. I guess the benefits of not doing that, of not going JUCO, are you start to really build depth throughout all your classes. Do you think Nebraska is sort of there starting this year from a depth perspective because they haven't done that?
Yeah, I think they're really close. You know, one of the big challenges if you go heavy JUCO because you're in sort of a win-now situation is all of a sudden, instead of being on a 4 or 5 year cycle, you know, you're on a 2 year one, and it just becomes maddening to keep up with. I imagine, you know, there's not many schools out there that do it consistently. You know, Kansas State seems to be the one example to the contrary. So, you know, if you find the star defensive end who's going to play 2 years and then go to the NFL, well, instead of having an extra year for a player who's that good, you're back on the market again. It can get you there, give you some short-term gains, but you know, if you do that in year one, year three, you might end up having what looks like should be year one. And when you do that in your third year of your tenure, it certainly gets perceived a little bit differently versus doing it in year one.
Just to follow that point up, and you got a piece of history with this that maybe affected how 2007 shook out. You went JUCO, Callahan did quite early with, think of that defensive line, not all, but some of those guys in 04 were JUCO guys. And I'm thinking Oladog Enduro specifically, really good player, thought he was talented, but the win now come in mentality, and you lost a really good front in the 07 draft with Jay and Carricker, specifically on the edge. and you didn't have any returning defensive linemen because
Sue and some of those guys weren't ready yet as true sophomores in 07. So you're right about the short-term versus the long-term, Bogues.
Yeah, and, you know, it also, like, people go to a junior college for a lot of different reasons. And not trying to paint with a broad brush here, but if you go into sort of, if you approach your recruiting and really care about the character part of it, well, the JUCO part adds another hurdle to clear, you know. So why did this player, you know, not do the work he needed to do to qualify and go to Florida State out of high school, or whatever may have happened, you know. I think that part of it factors in too. There's just a little bit more risk involved, not because any of these guys are bad guys, but just because there's sort of that, okay, well, why did we get to this point? Because clearly we think you can play at this level. So what happened there? I don't know how much football coaches look at that. I know in other sports, it's a little bit bigger.
Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues, what's coming up this weekend?
Watch the rest of the draft, watch an NBA playoffs, and continue working on a couple of yearbook features. It's that time of year here in the Hail Varsity offices.
Love it. Well, Vogues, we'll catch up next week. Thanks for a few minutes today.
All right. Thanks, guys.
There he is, Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. This weekend, a chance for you to go see Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. What's a pure-grown diamond? Well, it's a 100% real diamond that's grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. Pure-grown diamonds have all the characteristics of earth-mined diamonds. Many of the customers at Sauter Heyman think they're very, very beautiful. And see for yourself, they're eco-friendly. They're 10 to 40% less than earth-mined diamonds. Pure-grown diamonds become one of the biggest and best sellers at Sauter Heyman. And that says a lot. Can stop by today, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, or South Point Pavilion Lincoln, and see Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. If you're heading out west, Grand Island, a Sauter Heyman location for you. Can log on sauterheyman.com. The Iron Horse, Gary Sharp up next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. Going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning. The Iron Horse, Gary Sharp with his Sharpie. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys.
So, you've been locked into the draft. You've been casually following. What's your viewership or listenership been like with it?
I'm following the draft intently because I think it tells you a lot about college football and recruiting and so on and so forth. And you know, we all sit around and you start thinking about comparing Nebraska to Ohio State and Michigan and Wisconsin, teams that had schools that had good days in the NFL draft on Thursday, and you're thinking, all right, what model to follow, or you know, how far are you away? And then you see some guys go yesterday. You know, I would expect that Cetson Carter and Nate Gary both will go late today to continue that streak, which I think is pretty important. But I think we all could have seen this coming, that Nebraska would be like this, like they were a couple of years ago, where they had to wait until the final day to get two in when Burkhead and Stafford went. But, yeah, the NFL draft is, you know, the NFL always wins. I think the NFL draft has become almost as big or bigger than the regular season. It's something that, you know, if you're an NFL or a football person, you dive all over in. And it's fascinating. I've actually, after seeing the crowds in Philadelphia, thought, wow, that might be moved to the bucket list to go to an NFL draft if they continue to hold it around the country at different venues.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. It's interesting with the NFL draft in Nebraska in that you have three receivers. One used to be a quarterback, Tommy Armstrong. But you have Alonzo Moore, you have Jordan Westerkamp, you have Tommy Armstrong. Unlikely to get drafted, those three. But wouldn't you say that those three have as good of a chance in the pros, if they can stay healthy, as any of the guys that are get drafted?
Well, I think, Mark, that's a good point, because I said, you know, people made a big thing about how many Nebraska guys were at the combine. And I said, would you rather celebrate or talk about the lack of people at the combine, or let's more importantly look how many guys are going to be on NFL training camp rosters, because that'll be a bigger number for Nebraska. I actually, you know, I think Jordan Westerkamp, there's the chance he could get drafted, but if I'm a Jordan Westerkamp, or I'm a Brandon Riley, or I'm a Alonzo Moore, or I'm a Terrell Newby, or even a Josh Banderas, I don't want to be drafted if I'm going that late, because I know with my agent the depth charts of the teams that are out there and what they've just drafted, and so I can pick and choose where I want to go. That's why I think, like, Jordan Westerkamp, I think, is in a really good spot where if he doesn't get drafted late tonight or tomorrow, his agent is already talking to the teams where they can find a place to him. But the other guy you mentioned, Mark, keep an eye on Tommy Armstrong. I think someone will give Tommy Armstrong a chance in NFL training camp, and then we'll all be, you know, very fascinated to see if he can make it as a wide receiver. There is no doubt that Tommy has put in the time to convince teams that he at least can get his foot in the door as a wide receiver. If you've seen him in Lincoln leading up to draft weekend.
Gary Sharp, a few minutes with us here on a Saturday, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharp, let's spend a couple more seconds on Tommy Armstrong. And I look at him not only through his career at Nebraska, but just his athleticism. And, I mean, he showed that regularly as a quarterback, getting out of problems, getting out of trouble. Did you think there was any doubt with him? I mean, I look at his personality, and he's always been extremely confident. Do you think he maybe wavered a bit with this transition to wide receiver, to being a pass catcher? That's normal. That'd be normal to be a little bit apprehensive about. But do you think he maybe went into this extremely confident, or do you think there was some trepidation?
No, I mean, if he wants to continue to play football, he isn't. There is no one that's taking a chance on him to play quarterback. But his route is to either be a running back or a wide receiver. Yeah. And once he decided on wide receiver, he put in the time. You know, where he really got me is when he started working out for the NFL teams and they were releasing some of their numbers, and you're like, wow,
yeah,
maybe this wide receiver thing can work out. And I've watched him. I mean, he's put in a lot of time with Coach Williams. I think, and Gil Brandt was on my show, probably 2-3 months ago, a guy that was kind of the godfather of the NFL draft. And he brought up Tommy Armstrong unsolicited. He said, somebody's going to put Tommy Armstrong in a training camp. And Tommy Armstrong, whether he's in the first round of cuts or the second round of cuts, he's going to make it hard on the team to say, gosh, we have to get rid of this guy, when maybe they keep him around and they put him on a practice squad just to see if there's something there.
God, imagine if it was Tanner Lee at quarterback. Think about what we were just saying. I didn't even mention Brandon Riley. So you have Riley, you have Moore, you have Westerkamp, and then Tommy Armstrong. All four of those guys will be in camps. All four of them have a chance to be on NFL. So Nebraska could potentially have four NFL receivers.
Well, they're becoming wide receiver U along with DBU if you look at how they're recruiting. Here's the crazy thing about the draft, and if you tie it back to Nebraska. Nebraska's had as many wide receivers and running backs drafted since 2011, both three. They haven't had an offensive guy go in the first round since 1996 with Lawrence Phillips. They haven't had an offensive lineman go that high since 2002. The NFL draft can kind of give you a little microcosm of what's going on inside of your program. Not all the time, but in Nebraska's case, it definitely does.
You know, Brandon brought something up in the last segment that I think I knew, but just really haven't discussed much. There have been zero junior college recruits under Riley since he got here. And if you look at kind of where the numbers are distributed for Nebraska in terms of classes, and you really have five classes on campus when you include redshirt freshmen, right? Mm-hmm. Redshirt freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. Nebraska carries 135 players, includes walk-ons. Seniors right now, there's only 20. And probably five of those guys you've never heard of, and they're never going to play because they're walk-ons that just they're not going to play. But you look at Nebraska's junior and sophomore classes, that's 56 guys of that 135. So you're talking about like 42% of your roster are juniors and sophomores, and then the redshirt freshman class has 26, and the freshman class coming in has 32. Do you think we'll start to see, I guess, the benefits of not going JUCO because Nebraska has now kind of stocked each of those classes and therefore is going to develop some depth?
I I agree with you, and I will tell you why. And I've asked the same question on, because we thought with the Mike Riley's success of junior college players at Oregon State, that moving to this area where you've got Iowa Western across the river, get the rest of the Jayhawk League teams, there's a great chance to get into the junior colleges. And I think he's been hesitant because he wants to find, first of all, he doesn't want a quick fix. He wants something that builds and doesn't want to give off that, uh-oh, we got to get a quick fix, which sometimes you do with the junior college player. And also think through the tires that they've kicked, and there haven't been many in looking at junior college players since the staff has been here, they just haven't found anybody that's a fit. And that's big with Mike Riley, is a junior college player has to come in, not only fit their system, but fit the culture where you socially can get them in when they're kind of that oddball because they're coming late into a class. But keep an eye on what the Nebraska staff's doing in the summer when they go down to Lawrence and they're part of that junior college kind of satellite camp, so to speak. If that maybe gets them more in the door with junior colleges and maybe shifts them towards that. But I like how they've built this roster in terms of going high school kids. I also think in their mind, they're confident enough that they can develop high school kids than the junior college player, which sometimes you don't have to give as much development to, or you can't develop them because everything's already ingrained in them and they've kind of hit their ceiling.
Sharpie, let's stay with the summer camp. And we were talking with Vogel a little bit about the impact and partnership with the Adidas schools. In your opinion, what type of platforms Adidas give Nebraska and some of the other schools associated with Adidas? It seems like a lot of the 7-on-7 kids are big-time Adidas guys already.
Well, it's huge. Adidas doesn't have as many schools as they had in the past, and there's so much competition between them, Nike, Under Armour, that Adidas wants their schools to do well. Don't kid yourself. Miami is the number one school in the rankings right now. That's an Adidas school. Adidas has gone all in on Miami. They've gone all in on Nebraska. It's kind of, you got to be careful. As 7-on-7 gets bigger and bigger every single offseason, we may start to see, you know, the heavy shoe influence that we saw in basketball, a heavy shoe influence in football with that three-stripe life where Adidas gets involved, where they're steering kids that are being recruited by their schools to their camps. That's something to keep an eye on. It's something that a lot of people around the game have been talking about since the fall. But, you know, for right now, Adidas is a huge asset to Nebraska. Adidas wants Nebraska to be successful, and so they're going to brand good things. They're going to hold camps where they get players that are being looked at by Nebraska to their camps. So right now, Nebraska can use Adidas more than they probably have used in the past, and it wouldn't surprise me with Adidas' contract right around the corner being up again if Nebraska re-ups with Adidas, because Adidas is looking at more than just putting gear and branding into the athletic program. They're looking at all the other stuff that Adidas does with camps and so on and so forth of helping Nebraska and exposing Nebraska to maybe those athletes they haven't been able to get into before, but they can get into because Adidas is opening up the door for them.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Hey, real quick, back to the draft. Not a good year for Nebraska, obviously, with the draft. Next year, I'm not sure it's much better. I think you have six sort of draftable guys. You got Kalu, he's got a shot. You got Chris Jones, he's obviously got a shot. You got Marcus Newby, DPE, maybe Chris Webber, maybe Kyron, maybe David Neville. It's not going to be good really until probably 2019, right? Wouldn't you say that the 19 class probably has your most guys that could be in the upper reaches of the draft?
Yes. Next year, let's say Nick Gates has a really good year. Maybe there's that possibility. How would you feel, Mark, if next year Nebraska was in the same boat where they just have two guys that are being considered? One is Chris Jones, who there is no doubt that Chris Jones, one, wants to help his team to success, and number two, have a fantastic year that gets into the league. But what if it was Chris Jones and Drew Brown? What would the reaction be then?
Yeah, geez. And you know what? Here's the thing about Chris Jones. I don't think his measurables are going to be that good. I think he's a good corner.
No.
But
you know what
it'll be? He's not going to run a blistering 40. He's not going to have crazy hops.
But you know who? Stiff. You know, I'll use a guy that I think in the first two rounds of the draft relies more on watching film than reading numbers on a piece of paper, John Lynch at San Francisco. Chris Jones on film will stand out to football guys. Chris Jones writing numbers down on paper won't stand out. But if you watch film, I think that's where Chris Jones would benefit going into this year and then next year's NFL draft.
Yeah.
Sharpie, to wrap, do you have a team that Gary lands with, the team that Seathan lands with?
I think it's a crapshoot right now on where they go. I think you maybe think maybe Minnesota, because Rick Spielman, not only his connection to Nebraska, but Rick Spielman was at a couple of games. The Giants and the Jets had numerous scouts at games. Maybe I know the Bengals had some interest in Nate Gary, but I think when you get to day number three, and remember, there's some pretty good players that go in rounds 4 through 7, it's kind of a crapshoot, and now you're looking for the best fit where you have a chance to make the roster. But also, it's going to be a rough day for Nebraska football from the standpoint, I don't know if you guys have touched on this or not, but Randy Gregory has failed his 7th drug test.
Oh, so, come on, man.
So on the heels of, a couple years ago, him being drafted as high as he was, that will continue to be a storyline that Nebraska will be brought up. So that's what we have to look forward to today, guys.
Well, that's rough. Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio, the Iron Horse. Sharpie, have yourself a great weekend. Thanks for a few minutes today, bud.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Gary. Oh, man, how about that? So when you think of the sort of character problems at Nebraska, how come Nebraska's best players are always kind of the I don't know. I'm just saying, look at Sue. He's stepping all over people. Incognito is going, beating people up. You got Gregory that's just got his head in a bong all the time. God. Can you catch a break? Come on.
With Randy, what's he had 4 games he's played in his career.
Oh, that's crazy, man.
Taco Charlton.
He's got to be done. 7th?
Dallas just drafted Taco at defensive end.
Yeah, he's got to be done.
Well, a year ago, we were talking to Coach Kaz when Malik got drafted. Yeah. This day.
So I guess for every one of those guys, you got your Malik and you got your Rex Burkheads.
Yeah, your Vincents.
And Amir, right? Yeah. But still, man, it seems like Nebraska's quotient of those guys is, like, you just think about the NFL villains of the past few years. Incognito's one of them, Sue's one of them, now Gregory, and it's like, geez.
Well, we'll spend a couple minutes on Randy. That's news that I hadn't seen yet on Randy Gregory, number 7. So we'll take a quick timeout. We'll wind down a Saturday on Hail Varsity.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Cranack.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Wanted out of Saturday, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Cranack is off to youth soccer. Thanks for your time for tuning in this morning. If you miss any part of Hail Varsity Radio, you can log on hailvarsity.com, get the podcast, hear us on your time. Also, the ESPN 1480 app, a convenient place to go get Greg Ethan Smith or Hail Varsity Podcasts, and iTunes can subscribe to that. So the report out from Katie Drummond a couple of hours ago, Gregory failing his 7th drug test. And full disclosure, Randy Gregory is one of my favorites. And that just comes from spending time and talking with him when he was at Nebraska. I enjoyed the interviews he was kind enough to grant. We had a good time during that 2014 season, 2013 season, and even 2 weeks before the combine. He came on with this on Hail Varsity Radio. Now, we know what happened just right before the combine. We know what's happened post-combine. So without even needing to be said, you hope he just gets life together. From a professional standpoint, Gregory already suspended this season. Appears he won't play ever for Dallas. According to TMZ, Gregory failed another test, his seventh, and his inner circle is extremely concerned. TMZ, again, reporting this. They spoke with multiple people with direct knowledge of the situation who confirmed Randy tested on February 21st and informed March 2nd that his specimen came up positive. And since then, Gregory's blown off NFL officials who tried to discuss the situation with him, and people connected with Gregory say that his career is likely over. Gregory's four-game suspension, the result of his fourth failed test, and his fifth failed test resulted in a 10-game ban, and his sixth caused for the current one-year calendar ban. So the only way, there's two ways Randy Gregory plays football again. One, he actually does win the battle and get clean. Two, the NFL changes their substance abuse policy to eliminate marijuana. That's unlikely. The collective bargaining agreement runs through 2020. It'll be addressed. There'll be some advocates to renegotiate marijuana in the clause. One of those, Jerry Jones for Dallas, he made a presentation to other league owners to abolish that portion of the league policy. Either Jerry knows that it's a league-wide issue, and some guys just aren't getting caught, or he's just about recreational / medical use. Now, Roger Goodell was on Mike and Mike this week, very anti-marijuana. It's not healthy. Thanks, Raj. And you look at the failed tests for Gregory and what that says and why he does it. Rehab was something that Gregory checked into pre-training camp in 2016. But following week 15 in 2016, he failed another test. So Dallas has done the absolute most they can. Caring owner, defensive coordinator, and then even a member of the Cowboys, not a player, but a member of the Dallas Cowboys being there to, for lack of a better term, babysit Randy. Now, there's also a story that came out from the Dallas News Sports Day regarding Randy Gregory. This ran in May of 2015, that there's some psychological and mental issues with Randy as to why he uses marijuana. And it is something that is his reasoning or others have given as to his reason for using. I don't know his mental state. I don't know what demons he's dealing with. No clue. I just know that the guy's got an issue with getting on the field. So you'll see if he can get life straightened out, and that is my hope as a guy who likes Randy Gregory. I love his talent, but I like the dude as a person. It's tough for the guy to feel anything but sadness right now. He just keeps being unable to take care of his business. And if you ask him deep down, he'd look you in the eye and tell you, yeah, I need to be more accountable. Saying and doing are two different things for him right now. So we'll see what is next and if Randy Gregory can get back to being the guy that got to Nebraska. Brilliant guy. Very, very intellectually gifted. Thing that I got the biggest kick out of with Randy Gregory was the grin he gave me because I had heard he played the violin. He's like, yeah, man, I played the violin till I was 8. And I don't know what 8-year-old Randy Gregory looked like, if he was, you know, close to being 6'5 then or not, but I can see Randy Gregory just playing the violin. So we'll keep you updated on that. Enjoy your Saturday draft day. Good luck to all the Huskers still out there, hoping to hear their name called or get a free agent deal. Thanks to TJ Henning. Thanks to Mark Kranak. Thanks to Gary Sharp and Brandon Vogel. Our Rewind with Joel Makovicka. All can be found on the Saturday edition of Hail Varsity's podcast. We'll talk to you Monday at 4. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.